Anisha
Ladies
knows
and
that totally.
gentlemen, yes, William. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive to HR. A messy beginning, but that's okay. We have our guest, Elaine. Are you there with
us? Hello. I'm here. Hello.
Hello, hello. All right. So happy Friday, everyone, William and Elaine. Hope you guys are having a great day at work and kind of excited to kick off our Drive Through HR show. So, Elaine, why don't you kick off by giving a brief intro about you so that our audience can learn more about you?
Oh, excellent. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Elaine Orler, and I divide my time between two organizations, Talent Function, the consulting firm that I oversee that focuses on helping organizations reinvent their recruiting process and technology and resource models. And we spend a lot of time really thinking about what is the best practice in recruiting and what's beneficial to all the stakeholders. And then the other half of my time is spent managing an organization called the Talent Board, which I think we're spending most of our time talking about today, which is focused on the Candidate Experience Awards and really bringing attention to the importance of candidates as stakeholders in the recruiting process, but the value proposition that organizations have and really making that experience the best it possibly can be.
So first of all, I want to thank you for the announcement of me being your new president of Talent Function, right? I saw the press release. I want to thank you for elevating my position. I mean, most people probably didn't think of me there, but, you know, I'm just kidding. Let's spread that rumor. That'll be a good internet rumor for the next 15 minutes. No, just kidding. Tell us about, obviously, the promotion of Lynn. Just, if you don't mind, I know you don't really like putting me a whole lot of talk around Talent Function, but you do great work there and have for years. So what led to this, and what do you hope to get out of kind of the promotion, et cetera?
Oh, lots of things led to this. So, yes, Lynn Knight has been promoted to president of Talent Function, and mainly because the guy deserves it. He's done a phenomenal job of helping to really build out the business. But the reality is we're growing, or the organizations and the complexity of talent acquisition process and technology today is the most complex I've ever seen it. And I've been in this industry now for 20-plus years. Now, don't forget, I started when I was 5, so I really haven't even hit 29 yet. But the reality is he has a deep, deep understanding and a passion for the industry and a passion for the technology and the organizations getting that equation right. And as we continue to see the consulting efforts and the needs for organizations and the work that we do increase, it made the most sense to really think about another person that can actually drive that business forward. It's also, selfishly allows me a little more flexibility to spend much more time in 2015 with the Talent Board and the nonprofit efforts that are there. So excited for both organizations. I think they're both going to grow because of the transitions.
That's fantastic. So what's, as it relates to all of your work, the totality of work, what's keeping practitioners up at night these days? What's top of mind for these folks?
Oh, great question. I think the interesting thing is I don't think the actual thing that's keeping them up at night has changed much. It's still we need the right people and we need them fast. And I think that's always been an equation for recruiting. I think what's keeping them up longer at night is the fact that that's not just the solution for that is not a one-line sentence. It's now 5 to 6 pages of things that need to be done in order to make that effective. And in some cases, it is the technology ecosystem just for recruiting alone. On average, corporations have between 8 and 12 different products they need to touch in order to solve for recruiting on a daily basis. And just making sure that they're even connected correctly or that there's data that's flowing between them, there's days and days of lost sleep from that alone.
I've often thought that no two practitioners sit on the exact same technology stack. So first of all, demystify that or kill that anecdote, if you will. Do you see that folks have, you know, Taleo Enterprise, and for this they use that, and for this they use that? Do you see similar technology stacks behind the veil, or do you see everything is absolutely different depending on who you're talking to?
It is as unique as the organization is unique. And I think in many cases that's actually the right answer, because no two organizations recruit identically, or nor should they, especially if they're competing with each other. There's a competitive differentiation we're shooting for in recruiting, and that comes with how we put these pieces together based on what our business needs are. Some organizations, as an example, where they need more tools to source future talent because it's about cultivating a relationship that's 6 and 9 months before they recruit. What that looks like is much different than organizations that already have a recognition or a position that they get 200 plus people applying to the job already. It's a matter of filtering through those for the best possible person at that right time. Right person, right time, right skill set. So in each of those equations, one solution set does not meet all, because there's specialties in each of those examples. And I think organizations should be applying the technology towards those specialties. So when an organization has a core Taleo system, what they connect to it can be very different across the board.
That's right. There is no one size fits all. So, Elaine, what have you seen among the industry when it comes to organization personalizing their recruiting experience to those candidates and applicants out there?
Oh, excellent question. I think there's a couple of things we're seeing even from the trend data from last year and some of the trend data that we're starting to uncover for this year's awards program. Last year, I think one of the greatest opportunities in the experience with candidates is really improving upon the mobile aspect. And we saw almost all the organizations that were winners last year have an initiative around mobile. And it's not just turning the job search component into apply, but it's interactivity through mobile. It's being able to present content and information using the platform that the person is already on. So am I on a desktop screen? Am I on a tablet screen? Am I on a phone screen, et cetera? But allowing that interaction to happen much more fluid to the device. I think some of the things we're seeing this year, and we're seeing more so in the trends, the opportunity for credentialing to apply, which I think is a huge value add to the candidates. Times that candidates are required to recreate the same information, my first name, my last name, my address, when in fact they could use a credential program from I apply via Facebook, apply via LinkedIn, apply via Monster, Indeed, et cetera, which takes the information they've already stored about their career information and publishes it that application process. Huge, huge value, time save, effort save, and value add to the candidates. And that's one of the things we're starting to see a lot more of this year. Could probably go on for days on more examples we're seeing.
We're going to need a longer show. That's what I've learned. That's what I just learned here. So the next couple weeks are fairly chaotic in some ways because of all the research that's been done for the last couple of months. You're going to, I believe, in Chicago. You've got Erie that you're going to be doing some things at. You've got the Candidate Experience Symposium on that Friday, and then you're going to be at HR Tech, just come a few weeks later in Vegas. Tell us about this run-up. You know, you do it every year.
Absolutely.
God love you. You do it every year, but this is a little bit different this year in a number, at least the symposium, having your own event. And you're also, in years past, I believe you've released the results and had the award winners at HR Tech. And this year you're going to trot out something a little bit different. Take us into those things, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Well, the good news is if everybody works on different calendars emotionally, my beginning of year, I work on an academic calendar, so this is my high point of the year. So the need for the extra energy is definitely expended. So personally, at least it's in the fall. But we do start a crazy run of information. It started for me personally last week, dropping off my youngest to college and officially embracing the empty nester phase of my life, which means that for all of those that are already express concern around my aggressive travel, just be forewarned, it's going to increase. We start September off with the ERE conference, which I'm really excited to be working with them on and leading one of the thought leadership side think tank programs there. We go straight from that into announcing the Candy Award winners this year. We've opted to move the program up a month from last year and the years past. We're announcing the winners on Thursday the 18th at a open reception from 5 to 7:30 at McCormick Place in Chicago. The winners will be announced. We do have a good set of winners. I am so excited for everyone to hear who's won this year and why. There's some great data. In fact, of the overall program this year, we had a little over 200 companies that initiated the process. From there, we were able to move to about 130 or so that went to round two. And round two in this program is the difficult one. That is sending surveys out to your candidates and getting your candidates to respond to them on how they felt the experience was with your organization. We had 95,000 candidate responses this year in a 7-week period of time. So as a reference point from that, William, last year we had 46,000, and we were overwhelmed with that number. So to see it double, and it's doubled year over year the last 4 years, the candidates are desperate for a way to have a voice in the process, and they took every opportunity to write in comments. 95,000 candidates times on an average 3 write-in comments per candidate, and on top of the number of questions we ask them through the survey, which I think is insane in and of itself, the data that we have is colossal. And we're trying to figure out what we're going to do and how to even distill this information out. But we're going to announce those winners on the 18th, and then we are going straight into, on the 19th, that Friday, you're right, hosting our own event, a symposium on candidate experience. And to borrow from a phrase that Jerry Crispin uses constantly and the essence of that symposium, it is about the conversation. We've set it up in such a way that there are some panelists that are companies that have won that will talk about their specific experiences. We shift from the panels into table talk discussions and exercises so that anybody that's participating or attending should walk away with 3 to 5 things they could do immediately within their organizations to help focus on candidate experience. And a couple of great keynotes. We have Libby Sartain that's going to kick us off for the day with an overview of the importance of work. And just really looking forward to an exciting full day, full charge. And then we rush to HR Tech, where we have a couple of our past winners and potentially current winners, but I can't say that yet until after the 18th, on a panel there as well to really, again, expose what they're doing to make a difference with candidate experience in their organizations and the value proposition it's brought to them.
So I got to ask you, without revealing the winners, but also without revealing too much about the data, I want to ask a real high level, like what something that you were shocked by, either shocked in a good way, like, oh, wow, we've made great strides, or shocked like, I can't believe we're still talking about this. Like what's one thing that as you look at the data, you know, that just still kind of shocks you?
Oh, there's always something that shocks me. I think because we have two sides of the equation on the data. We have the employer data where we ask the employers to complete an exhaustive survey to tell us about their practices and what they're going through. And I think the one that continues to, and it's more numbing now than it is shocking, is the number of applicants per requisition that the employers are still projecting out. And we have employers of every size. We have small boutique under 1,000 employees all the way up to multi-hundreds of thousands of employees. So even within that full range of organizations, it's consistent that each organization is saying they receive on average 200 applicants per position. And that volume is parallel to last year, which just continues to tell me that not only, even though our unemployment numbers are continuing to demonstrate they're coming down, the number of people applying to opportunities or looking for jobs is not coming down. And what that tells me is the underemployed, those that have been in positions that aren't getting advancements or aren't seeing all of their talents realized are now really starting to fill the recruitment cycle again. So that was probably, that's the first trend on the employer side. On the flip side, on the candidate side, I'm excited that we get to continually measure year over year the generational differences in the industry. The fact that we continue to have five generations in the job search, which also means then in the workforce, and starting to really draw upon where there are some differences between expectations from those that have been in their job search through the baby boomer and Generation X and those that are in the millennials and Generation Z, which are those born after 96. And we also get the question all the time, why do we have another generation beyond millennial? That's because they just now turning 18 and a completely different set of expectations from those than those of us that are probably the parents of some of those people. So I really enjoy looking at the data for the most part through the generational lens to see where there are differences. At the end of the day, the one thing that is consistent across all generations is the desire to be treated with respect and the desire for a response. The number of friends that they consider they have, the amount of a time of content that they're willing to publish publicly or personally or tell their friends about their experience is very consistent, but across the board, they all just want to know where they stand in the process.
So let me ask you about volume. Candidates applying to, 100 jobs a day and hiring managers, probably feeling like they need 500 people to apply to the job so that either they don't trust what goes on in the rinsing process or they're just in love with a large number, large volume, numbers of applicants. First of all, do you believe there's a world where we should all fall in love with a smaller number, meaning candidates should only apply to the jobs that really they're really interested in, and hiring managers need to kind of reset their expectations that all the stuff that works in the rinsing and the screening and assessment stuff, all of that works, and really you only need 20 people to apply, 20 legitimate, like it's a quality game versus a quantity game. Like what's You've been behind the veil at a lot of different places, so you've seen this play out in real life. What's your general take on volume?
I would love to live in utopia. Let me just start there. I'd like a one-way ticket.
You live in San Diego. You live in San Diego. It's pretty close.
I do live
to
in
utopia.
Paradise, but I'm willing to move. I live in paradise. I'm willing to move to utopia. Just so you know. The proof of that or the reality of the equation that you're describing, we're actually just really coming into embracing the right kind of data metrics in recruiting. We've monitored volume numbers for years. It's always been about, how many hires do we have today? How many requisitions do I have open? How many do I have filled? So those count numbers we've been doing since we started using technology 25 plus years ago. So we're moving past the counts now into what's the quality equation for recruiting, and more is not always better. And I think even the hiring manager in many cases, depending on the caliber and what they're trying to accomplish, they also recognize more is not better. But they feel the need to see more in order to make sure that they're making the best decision. And what we're starting to see are the tools that are able to help make stronger, smarter decisions with less. So a lot more attention around the right kind of assessments up front, the qualifications. We're seeing a lot more of attention around getting the job description published correctly. We tell lies in the job description we publish, and then we blame the candidate for applying to it when they're not qualified. So we're starting to see, and I'm excited about some of the advancements around the ability for the video components to come in directly with the job description, the realistic job preview of the manager talking about what it's like to work in that environment, but incorporating those kinds of things into that description, which is going to filter out candidates that don't like that already, and filter them in such a way that they'll gravitate towards something that feels like it's a better fit for them, so we're not spending time on candidates that truly aren't qualified, but then it'll also excite those that are more qualified, and it should actually help right set the equation. But in every organization and every recruitment effort, that equation, I think, is as unique as that organization is. the reality of being able to benchmark between company A and company B, you know, our time to fill is 15 days, while yours is 45. Time to fill is irrelevant if the quality of the hire is producing for the business and time for the business. That's what we should be focusing on measuring, and I think organizations are really getting at that now.
Absolutely. Well, Elaine, while we were talking about the candidate assessment and the quality of hire, we know as an HR professional we wanted to focus more on the culture fit. But recently I talked to a bunch of recruiters. I mean, we had a debate between HR and recruiters. So the notion of culture fit isn't that obvious for some of the recruiters out there. So do you think the recruiters are well-equipped enough to assess the culture fit?
I think my definition of recruiter, the answer is yes. And I think that there is a difference. I think we have a huge opportunity in this industry. And when you think about the terms that we reuse on a regular basis that are so generalized, you can talk to 10 different organizations and you can ask all 10 of them, what is your definition of recruiter? And you will probably get 9 different answers. And that is because in some cases, recruiter is responsible for everything from identifying all the way through to making sure that they're happy 30 days after they've been in the job, or recruiter is only dealing with those that are pre-qualified and managing relationship with the manager, or recruiter is just responsible for sourcing and then any combination anywhere in between. And so when you start to think about, you know, what is the recruiter role in assessing cultural fit, assessing technical fit, assessing behavioral fit for the business, it all differentiates based on the type and the caliber of recruiter and the organizational structure you're dealing with. There are some great products that help with these things that will help put markers up in front that say this is probably a risk factor, or here's a subset of questions you really need to drill into more in order to make sure that it is the right fit. At the end of the day, what I think gets missed is that at the end of the day, the manager is ultimately responsible for the hiring decision. They're the ones that need to be able to understand if this person's going to fit within their organization structure, fit within the team that they have today, or the team that they're building for tomorrow. And they ultimately have that responsibility of being able to make that decision.
Elaine, I want to get your take on Glassdoor, kind of either what you're seeing from practitioners or just something you're becoming more and more aware of, like, what is their role in the candidates either, you know, looking at, you know, companies via Glassdoor or sites like Glassdoor, and companies managing their and or their employer brand through something like Glassdoor? Just what's your take on Glassdoor right now?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me see if I can answer that one. So I am fascinated with what they're doing. And I think, you know, from the perspective of, and I have to use this in a context, I mean, I'm not aware of anybody that actually books a hotel anymore without, you know, if they haven't already been there, that hasn't gone out and looked at a crowdsourced model of what everybody else's opinion is of that hotel. And so we do that with restaurants, we do that with hotels, we do that with our shopping and our retail, we do that with our cars. The appliances we're buying for our home, everything comes with a star rating and or customer feedback mechanism to it. So Glassdoor's ability to create that same kind of feedback mechanism in the employment cycle and what's happening from an organization perspective that way, I think, is brilliant. And while they may be the first there, I don't believe they're going to be the last. I think there are plenty of other organizations and groups that are doing some similar things. And in ranking companies' ability to respond in responsiveness, company performance, what it's like to work there, what you can expect, you know, were you given the truth when you applied and were hired versus what's really here. And I think it's just part of the way in which we communicate today that that information is going to become more and more important in the recruitment cycle going forward. Again, it wasn't, you know, 10 years ago we wouldn't have thought to trust a total stranger on which coffee pot we buy today. And now, you know, you can't get past buying a new coffee pot without reading strangers' reviews. So we've just evolved from that kind of marketing, that kind of informational age that the same thing is happening from the job perspective. I do think it's important that organizations start to figure out how to be in front of and embrace this kind of scoring and evaluation, because it's the direction we're going.
Right. So, okay, so first of all, let's get back to candidate experience for just a moment. Here you have this wonderful nonprofit. You do great work. What do you need? Like, what do you, if you had a list of needs, you need an army of people to carry this message for, you need some volunteers, you need people to show up for a symposium. Like, what are your list of needs for the audience?
Oh, wow. I wish I would have known that question before we got on this phone call. I could have written a whole long list. You know, I think the answer, I'll just boil it down to two simple things. We are a nonprofit, and we want to keep the entity as a nonprofit, which means that we need sponsorships and donations and pledges. So we look to the industry providers, the solution providers that are trying to make a difference in this industry, and we are asking them to step up and be a sponsor for the 2015 program. And so we allocate our entire plan based on what we get in sponsorships. So we're always looking for organizations that are interested in the sponsorship opportunity. Beyond that, we're also looking for industry veterans that want to be a part of the volunteer effort. We have a Candy Council, which I know you are a part of, and thank you for your time on that. But it's helping to shape everything from how the surveys are managed, what the kind of data will be from the survey, the massive fire hose report book ebook that we put out at the end of the year. There's content contribution opportunities in all of those categories. I would say that those are the major efforts, and we don't turn anybody away. If they want to help lift, grab a corner of this parachute, then we have no problem giving them a piece of it. And it, for me, the biggest thing has just been continuing to perpetuate the importance that candidates are stakeholders, and treating them with respect is the baseline. And there's still so many organizations in the industry and so much negative publicity about how bad that experience is. Our goal is just to turn that tide.
Great. Well, in this discussion, I think I may not be asking this question, but then still I'm asking this one from you. So what are some couple of things that you think that candidates are doing to ruin the candidate experience?
Oh, how are they making it worse? Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. There's a lot of things that they're doing. One, they're accepting bad behavior from companies. And I think one of the hardest things in having some close friends and family members that have been long-term unemployed due to unforeseen circumstances, I can't even say that right, but understanding the emotional psyche that happens. Candidates get so associated, I mean, the rejection process that happens in the recruitment cycle is incredibly personal. And so I think, you know, for candidates, I think the best advice I have for them on really making this better is to be proud of the fact that you know what you're doing and don't give up, but also start to really push back on this lack of communication from companies. I think that candidates have a voice, and so often they're told they don't. They have an opportunity to really start saying they do. And whether it be sites like Glassdoor or these other places, the more candidates that are willing to express that they just won't take that kind of treatment anymore, the more likely we are to see organizations start to change.
Right. Well, Elaine, thank you so much for joining us again on our show. Always a pleasure to have you here. Where can our audience come and find you or connect with you after this show?
Oh, excellent. Well, Elaine Orler, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, they all work. And or thecandies.org is the website for the Candidate Experience Awards. And if anybody is in Chicago on the 18th and wants to come to the reception, there's a link to register for the reception or even the symposium. We'd love to see you there. And if you want to know more about the consulting practice, it's talentfunction.com.
All right. So have a wonderful weekend to Elaine and William and to all of our audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I don't care, baby, by the way.